So last week we talked about chapter 21, which left us with a lot of looming questions. And then we just read through chapter 22, which may or may not resolve some of those questions. It's a good argument for removing the chapter breaks, at least when we're reading. Like the chapter numbers, the verse numbers, they're really helpful for allowing us to find our place with things, but they do sometimes get in the way of reading the text. So why don't we back up to chapter 21 and read chapter 21 and chapter 22 together, and then revisit some of our questions from last week and then see what else we see. So 1 Samuel 21, it's on page 346 in my Bible, but that probably doesn't help you. Yeah. 244 in one of the Pew Bibles. We have, they all look the same, but we actually have two different printings in the Pew Bibles. So that's why the page number in the Pew Bibles was in the bulletin for 1 week. All right. Then David came to Nob, to Ahimelech the priest. And Ahimelech came to meet David trembling and said to him, "Why are you alone and no one with you?" And David said to Ahimelech the priest, "The king has charged me with a matter and said to me, 'Let no one know anything of the matter about which I send you and with which I have charged you. I have made an appointment with the young men for such and such a place. Now then, what do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread or whatever is here.' And the priest answered David, 'I have no common bread on hand, but there is holy bread, if the young men have kept themselves from women.' And David answered the priest, 'Truly, women have been kept from us, as always, when I go on an expedition. The vessels of the young men are holy, even when it is an ordinary journey. How much more today will their vessels be holy?' So the priest gave him the holy bread, for there was no bread there but the bread of the presence, which is removed from before the Lord to be replaced by hot bread on the day it is taken away. Now, a certain man of the servants of Saul was there that day, detained before the Lord. His name was Doeg the Edomite, the chief of Saul's herdsmen. And David said to Ahimelech, 'Then have you not here a spear or a sword at hand? For I have brought neither my sword nor my weapons with me, because the king's business required haste.' And the priest said, 'The sword of Goliath the Philistine, whom you struck down in the valley of Elah, behold, it is here, wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If you will take that, take it, for there is none but that here.' And David said, 'There is none like that. Give it to me.' Then David rose and fled that day from Saul and went to Achish, the king of Gath. And the servants of Achish said to him, 'Is not this David the king of the land? Did they not sing to one another of him in the dances? Saul has struck down his thousands and David his 10,000s. And David took these words to heart and was much afraid of Achish, the king of Gath. So he changed his behavior before them and pretended to be insane in their hands and made marks on the doors of the gate and let his spittle run down his beard. Then Achish said to his servants, 'Behold, you see the man is mad. Why then have you brought him to me? Do I lack madmen that you have brought this fellow to behave as a madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house?' David departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brothers and all his father's house heard it, they went down there to him. And everyone who is in distress, and everyone who is in debt, and everyone who is bitter in soul gathered to him. And he became commander over them. And there were with him about 400 men. And David went from there to Mizpah of Moab. And he said to the king of Moab, 'Please let my father and my mother stay with you till I know what God will do for me.' And he left them with the king of Moab, and they stayed with him all the time that David was in the stronghold. Then the prophet Gad said to David, 'Do not remain in the stronghold. Depart and go into the land of Judah.' So David departed and went into the forest of Hereth. Now Saul heard that David was discovered, and the men who were with him. Saul was sitting at Gibeah under the tamarisk tree on the height with his spear in his hand, and all his servants were standing about him. And Saul said to his servants who stood about him, 'Hear now, people of Benjamin, will the son of Jesse give every one of you fields and vineyards? Will he make you all commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds, that all of you have conspired against me? No one discloses to me when my son makes a covenant with the son of Jesse. None of you is sorry for me, or discloses to me that my son has stirred up my servant against me to lie in wait, as at this day. Then answered Doeg the Edomite, who stood by the servants of Saul, I saw the son of Jesse coming to Nob, to Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, and he inquired of the Lord for him, and gave him provisions, and gave him the sword of Goliath the Philistine. Then the king sent to summon Ahimelech the priest, the son of Ahitub, and all his father's house, the priests who were at Nob, and all of them came to the king. And Saul said, Hear now, son of Ahitub. And he answered, Here I am, my lord. And Saul said to him, Why have you conspired against me, you and the son of Jesse, in that you have given him bread and a sword, and have inquired of God for him, so that he has risen against me to lie in wait, as at this day? Then Ahimelech answered the king, And who among all your servants is so faithful as David, who is the king's son-in-law, and captain over your bodyguard, and honored in your house? Is today the first time that I have inquired of God for him? No. Let not the king impute anything to his servant, or to all the house of my father, for your servant has known nothing of all this, much or little. And the king said, You shall surely die, Ahimelech, you and all your father's house. And the king said to the guard who stood about him, Turn and kill the priests of the Lord, because their hand also is with David. And they knew that he fled, and did not disclose it to me. But the servants of the king would not put out their hand to strike the priests of the Lord. Then the king said to Doeg, You turn and strike the priests. And Doeg the Edomite turned and struck down the priests. And he killed on that day 85 persons who wore the linen ephod. And Nob, the city of the priests, he put to the sword, both man and woman, child and infant, ox, donkey, and sheep he put to the sword. But one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abiathar, escaped and fled after David. And Abiathar told David that Saul had killed the priests of the Lord. And David said to Abiathar, I knew on that day, when Doeg the Edomite was there, that he would surely tell Saul, I have occasioned the death of all the persons of your father's house. Stay with me. Do not be afraid, for he who seeks my life seeks your life. With me you shall be in safekeeping. Strikes you differently, I reckon it does me, when you read the two chapters together. What do we make then of Ahimelech's response to David and his response to Saul? What are some differences that you notice, or similarities? Is there a difference, for instance, between what the narrator reports and what the characters say? Is there a difference in tone? We noticed last week that Ahimelech comes to meet David trembling. He seems to be afraid, right? He seems to know something's up. But what do we see in him when he answers Saul? I'm going to take a drink so I stop asking leading questions. Oh, I want to hear what you all see. I feel like we left chapter 21 last week with the impression that Ahimelech probably doesn't believe David. David's story gets a little less believable with each layer he adds to it. But how does Ahimelech respond to Saul? He does. He defends himself, but right, yeah. Does he at any point cast aspersions on David? No. He takes David at his word. It would have been for him a golden opportunity to say, yeah, actually, David had me by the sword, right? And made me do these things. And by the way, that's the direction that he went. Especially because he's been summoned together with his entire household, his father's house, right? There's apparently 85 people there, and then they go to Nob to finish the job. So he probably knows that he's in a very delicate position as he answers Saul. It reminds me of Aaron when Moses comes down the mountain, right? Aaron knows, right? He's responding to Moses, who's representing God. He's not responding to Saul, who's evil, right? But it's a moment where he could own up to what's going on and face huge punishment, or he could make an excuse, right? And what does Aaron say, right? The people made me do this, is the first part of what he says. And then, right, they brought me all this gold and I threw it in the fire and out came this calf. Right? I've heard better self-justifying explanations from my own children than Aaron offers. There. But that's not what Ahitub does. Right? Ahitub knows that he's probably facing some significant backlash from a leader who is known to be unbalanced and to believe in conspiracy theories and to kill his enemies and those close to him about whom he believes conspiracies. Right? He's chasing down David with a sword in his hand, and all of these things Ahitub says about David are true. Right? That he is faithful, that he's the king's son-in-law, that he's captain over Saul's bodyguard, that he's honored in Saul's house, and yet he's chasing David with a sword in his hand, or a spear in his hand at least, and not for the first time. And Ahitub takes a stand for righteousness. There's a detail that Doug the Edomite mentions that the narrator didn't. Did you catch what that was? We're looking over a chapter and a half to catch that difference, so that's asking a bit more of you than most weeks. Scott, you're making a face like maybe you had. So there's what the narrator describes in the interaction between David Ahimelech. I keep saying Ahitub. Ahitub's his father, right? There's an interaction between David and Ahimelech in chapter 21. And then there's how Doug the Edomite describes that interaction to Saul. And there's a difference between what the narrator tells us and what Doug reports to Saul. Did you catch what that difference is? Doug the Edomite adds, actually in the first place in the sequence as he mentions it, that Ahimelech inquired of the Lord for David. The narrator doesn't mention that. It doesn't mean it didn't happen. Right? Perhaps it did, and the narrator chose not to tell us. It's an interesting difference, though. And it certainly puts a different spin on that interaction, I would think. What happens when Saul confronts Ahimelech?
And he also
Yeah. So in verse 10 of chapter 22, as Doug's describing it, he puts that first. Right? Son of Jesse coming to Nob, to Ahimelech. He inquired of the Lord for him, gave him provisions, gave him the sword. When Saul confronts Ahimelech then, in verse 13, why have you conspired against me? You gave him bread, you gave him a sword, and you inquired of God for him. And that placing it last seems to make it kind of the culmination of all these reasons I believe that you are part of this conspiracy against me. And how does Ahimelech respond? Yeah. I mean, verse 15, right? Is today the first time that I've inquired of God for him? No. So, and then Ahimelech says this thing. Right? Let not the king impute anything to his servant or to all the house of my father, for your servant is now nothing of all this, much or little. How does that sit with you? I feel a little uncomfortable with that, just that last line that he adds, given how he responds to David initially. Greets David trembling. So, but he is, he's trying to be very careful. And I think he makes the point almost that if he had right, refusing to inquire of God for David would have been an affront to Saul, given that David is essentially Saul's representative and Saul's chief officer. So yeah, Ahimelech's in a lose-lose situation, so of course he's going to lose. A little bit. Yeah, and if we weren't sure, I mean, the narrator's made it clear at several points that Saul's reaction is excessive. Saul's officers know that Saul's reaction is excessive, right? Because what does Saul tell them to do? But how does he specifically phrase it? All right, look at verse 16. Yeah, turn and kill the priests of the Lord. Because their hand is also with David. Now we do have examples of faithless priests. But here he's not singling out Ahimelech or one or two guys who are part of this conspiracy. Right? It's turn and kill these 85 people standing here. Because they've sided with David. Who's lying in wait, Saul believes. Except where have we seen David lying in wait? Yeah. Yeah, the only time we've seen David lying in wait is when he's lying in wait in the field for an answer from Jonathan to know whether he's safe or not. Right? He's not lying in wait to get Saul. Yeah. And he's run.
Right.
He's run. Yeah.
God. And so you need to pay attention. He acknowledges it. He says that you're a man of God, and each time
Yes. Yeah. We know that David's been anointed by the Lord's command. I think we're not sure at this point still if Saul knows that. And so there's this tension. Saul's opposed to David. And we know that David is the Lord's anointed, although Saul is too. But we talked about this typology where the leader of Israel is opposing the Lord's anointed. And here it comes to the fore so explicitly that Saul is, in doing this, directly opposing the Lord. Because it's not turn and kill Ahimelech and his house who's in on this. It's not turn and kill the priest who set his hand against me. It's turn and kill the priests of the Lord. And not just the priest of God either. It's Yahweh. It's the Lord's proper name. So, yes. So it's curious that his ethnicity is included. It's hardly the only time. Often someone is named together with their father's name or together with their occupation or together with the town they're from, and that's how we distinguish them from other people. But here we have Doeg the Edomite. And it mentions that he's the chief of Saul's herdsmen. So we get both his ethnicity and his occupation. It's a bit unusual to combine details when one of those would be sufficient to distinguish him. And I think we have in that, it plays into a theme across the Old Testament of the opposition between Judah and Edom. Israel and Edom early, but and Jacob and Esau, but then more particularly over the course of later biblical history, specifically Judah and Edom. So we see that at several points in the prophets. We see it in relation to the Babylonian exile, especially in Obadiah and in some of the Psalms. So I think there's definitely Doeg, the chief of Saul's herdsmen, doing this with Saul against David. But there's also overtones as we reread it in light of later biblical history of this opposition between Judah and Edom. So, that's a good question. Is it because he's from Edom and not from Israel that he is willing, when others are not, to put his hand against the priests of Yahweh? Maybe so. Maybe so. He's not a native-born Israelite. He probably didn't grow up worshiping the Lord, whether or not he does now. Which also means his position is a little more delicate's the wrong word, but he has more on the line if Saul's reign disintegrates and comes apart than the others do, because he's a servant of Saul and a member of Saul's court, and he's not a native Israelite, right? So if Saul's reign breaks up, then he loses his position. So that may also be part of it. Yeah. 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 Saul, at this point, seems to have no fear of the Lord. Which is interesting to observe here, and if we were to go back and reread earlier chapters in Samuel, look for it and see if it's there. Does he ever exhibit fear of the Lord? In his interactions with Samuel, certainly he fears the consequences of a developing tension with the Lord's prophet. And he knows the outward forms, like he's a good Israelite, generally speaking. But does he ever exhibit a clear, unambiguous fear of the Lord at any point in his reign? Kind of thing that we notice about someone afterward. Right, and this happens with people we know, people who grow up in our family or grow up in our church, and we wonder what happened to them. And then we look back and we can wonder, well, maybe they just were a nice person. And maybe they never had a real faith. Right? And perhaps that's true of Saul as well. And it's coming out. Coming more and more to the fore in these situations he's put in. Or puts himself in. So. It also makes you wonder the hesitation of the people around him. We mentioned already, like, they know that he's gone too far. What's that going to mean for Israel for the rest of his time and power? If he's surrounded by people who continue to serve him but are no longer really able to deny that he's essentially off his rocker.
Mm-hmm. He said, well, before that, he said they would not put out their hand to strike the priests of the Lord.
Yeah, verse 17. They would not.
Offering that, I probably would have shorthanded and just said the priests, because we've already established.
Yeah.
But it's, to me, that's saying they recognize.
Yeah.
No, these aren't.
Yeah. Yeah, the narrator goes out of his way to make sure you know and make sure you know that they know, and make sure you know that they know that Saul knows, that everybody knows that we're talking about killing the priest of the Lord. And there's no detail like we get in other parts of the prophets and such, where it's the wicked priests of the Lord or anything to suggest anything like that. These are the faithful, godly priests of the Lord. Yeah. Scott.
Jumping ahead to Saul's death.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost a parallel situation in that situation where the armor bearer won't do it.
Yeah.
In the Amalekite, because David tries to gain favor.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so we're jumping quite a ways ahead, but for the recording, yeah. Scott's bringing up the hesitancy of the armor bearer when Saul's dying and wants to be finished off so the Philistines can't say they did it. And his armor bearer hesitates and won't do it. But then an Amalekite, another foreigner, comes along and tries to get in good with David by suggesting that he finish Saul off. And we'll ask when we get there, as we read that passage carefully, is the Amalekite telling the truth? Or is he just totally making this up? So. Good. We'll ask more about that when we get there. But yeah, there's something to that. We should watch for other instances of that. Where else in this whole, in the grand narrative of Saul, David, the rest of Saul's reign, what's the place of foreigners and how do they interact? That's a good question, I think. David Firth has a volume in the New Studies in Biblical Theology series. Those are the ones that have the silver covers, IVP Press. I've not had a chance to pick it up yet, about the place of strangers in the former prophets. I look forward to getting into that. So, but that, I'll see if I can get a copy and see what he says about 1 and 2 Samuel. Yeah. You have a copy? Okay. Well, you might not this afternoon. I might come borrow it. So, all right. Should we jump into chapter 23? So think about how Saul is acting in the midst of all of this, as this supposed conspiracy with David is brought to the attention of his officers and of the nation, as he chases David in pursuit, as he wipes an Israelite town, a priestly town, off the map with the help of an Edomite. Contrast that with David's behavior as he's on the run in this next chapter. Now they told David, "Behold, the Philistines are fighting against Keilah and are robbing the threshing floors." Therefore David inquired of the Lord, "Shall I go and attack these Philistines?" And the Lord said to David, "Go and attack the Philistines and save Keilah." But David's men said to him, "Behold, we are afraid here in Judah. How much more then if we go to Keilah against the armies of the Philistines?" Then David inquired of the Lord again. And the Lord answered him, "Arise, go down to Keilah, for I will give the Philistines into your hand." And David and his men went to Keilah and fought with the Philistines and brought away their livestock and struck them with a great blow. So David saved the inhabitants of Keilah. When Abiathar the son of Ahimelech had fled to David to Keilah, he had come down with an ephod in his hand. Now it was told Saul that David had come to Keilah. And Saul said, "God has given him into my hand, for he has shut himself in by entering a town that has gates and bars." I want to come back to that, so I'm going to write the verse number down. Don't let me forget. And Saul summoned all the people to war, to go down to Keilah to besiege David and his men. David knew that Saul was plotting harm against him. And he said to Abiathar the priest, "Bring the ephod here." Then David said, "O Lord, the God of Israel, your servant has surely heard that Saul seeks to come to Keilah to destroy the city on my account. Will the men of Keilah surrender me into his hand? Will Saul come down as your servant has heard? O Lord, the God of Israel, please tell your servant." And the Lord said, "He will come down." Then David said, "Will the men of Keilah surrender me and my men into the hand of Saul?" And the Lord said, "They will surrender you." Then David and his men, who were about 600, arose and departed from Keilah, and they went wherever they could go. When Saul was told that David had escaped from Keilah, he gave up the expedition. And Saul remained in the strongholds in the wilderness, in the hill country of the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul sought him every day, but God did not give him into his hand. David saw that Saul had come out to seek his life. David was in the wilderness of Ziph at Horesh. And Jonathan, Saul's son, rose and went to David at Horesh and strengthened his hand in God. And he said to him, "Do not fear, for the hand of Saul my father shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel, and I shall be next to you. Saul my father knows this." We'll come back to that too. And the two of them made a covenant before the Lord. David remained at Horesh, and Jonathan went home. Then the Ziphites went up to Saul at Gibeah, saying, "Is not David hiding among us in the strongholds at Horesh, on the hill of Hachilah, which is south of Jeshimon? Now come down, O king, according to all your heart's desire to come down, and our part shall be to surrender him into the king's hand." And Saul said, "May you be blessed by the Lord, for you have had compassion on me." So much to stop and talk about. "Go, make yet more sure. Know and see the place where his foot is, and who has seen him there, for it is told me that he is very cunning. See, therefore, and take note of all the lurking places where he hides, and come back to me with sure information. Then I will go with you. And if he is in the land, I will search him out among all the thousands of Judah. And they arose and went to Ziph ahead of Saul. Now David and his men were in the wilderness of Maon, in the Arabah, to the south of Jeshimon. And Saul and his men went to seek him. And David was told. So he went down to the rock and lived in the wilderness of Maon. And when Saul heard that, he pursued after David in the wilderness of Maon. Saul went on one side of the mountain, and David and his men on the other side of the mountain. And David was hurrying to get away from Saul. As Saul and his men were closing in on David and his men to capture them, a messenger came to Saul, saying, "Hurry and come, for the Philistines have made a raid against the land." So Saul returned from pursuing after David, and went against the Philistines. Therefore that place was called the Rock of Escape. And David went up from there and lived in the strongholds of En-Gedi. So many things in this chapter are both overt and subtle.
Actually, just notched up a bit.
Sorry? The action definitely notched up a bit. What do you see in the contrast between David and Saul in this chapter?
David inquires of the Lord.
David inquires of the Lord.
And the Lord responds.
And the Lord responds. David inquires of the Lord responds. Yeah. What else do you notice? I find it very interesting. Right? Sometimes in the Old Testament we have God, Elohim, which is a generic word for a deity or deities, like the English word God, that can be used to refer specifically to God, our God, and can be used more generally to refer to divine beings or even pagan gods who are not gods. And in verse 7, where it says, "And Saul said," I think we're seeing Saul's thoughts, because Saul's not saying this to another person. We have God, not Yahweh, not the Lord. God has given him into my hand. But then when we have Saul talking to other people, for instance, in verse 21, right? Saul said, "May you be blessed by Yahweh, for you have had compassion on me," because they've come and told him where David is. So Saul seems to be holding on to these outward forms, and part of that is probably just a pattern of speech, right? But outwardly, not among his officers, right, but in his interaction with the people, he maintains these outward forms of orthodox Yahweh worship, right? Whereas inwardly, I think it may be telling that he says God and not Yahweh as he's thinking thoughts to himself. I don't know. That's very subtle. But there are very overt details in the contrast between David and Saul as well. How do you see them responding in terms of protecting Israel? He does go back, but how's the action reported when they respond to it, right? David is told the Philistines are fighting and are robbing, and he inquires and goes. Saul is far away chasing David when he is told the Philistines have made a raid. So both, in a sense, respond to a threat from the Philistines. But the way it's phrased and described, David meets the threat, and Saul responds to things the Philistines have already been able to do because he's left Israel unprotected in his pursuit of David. It's 9:59, and there's more to say in this chapter. But, yeah. I do think it's very interesting in verse 17 that Jonathan explicitly, expressly acknowledges that David is to be king. And he sees himself, Jonathan is a bit of a tragic figure in these chapters. Jonathan sees himself as serving with and under David. He's not jealous. He's not desirous of the glory that he knows properly belongs to David. He's not looking out for himself. He sees himself as willingly serving joyfully alongside and under the authority of David as David becomes king. And he knows that that's what gets his dad. So much more to say. Something to ponder before we talk about it next week. How do you see in David's actions in this chapter a type of Christ? I'll leave you with that question. And we'll return to it next week.